Former President Jimmy Carter cut short an election monitoring visit to Guyana this month because of health concerns. Now, anytime a president isn't feeling well, it raises eyebrows. But in this case, equally eyebrow-raising for many was the reminder that Jimmy Carter is 90. When did that happen? And how much globetrotting is he doing? Jimmy Carter has now lived longer after leaving office than any other president, so we thought we'd bring in Julian Zelitzer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School, for a look at Carter's living legacy. Julian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
We should say that Jimmy Carter has since said that he feels just fine. But this sent a little, sort of alarm through many of us. How about you?
Of course. Anytime we hear that from a former president, especially someone who's remained so active and such a public presence in not only the U.S. but all over the world, we have feelings of concern and fear.
Right. And well, we're suddenly struck, though, with how much traveling he has done. Guyana is the 100th country where his Carter Center has monitored elections since it was formed in 1989. That's 9 years after he left office, a one-term presidency. You believe that Jimmy Carter sort of recast what a post-presidency looks like. Tell us more.
I really do. I think, you know, there were different models for what a president could do. Certainly, they could continue to advise future presidents off the record. They might make some public appearances for their party, at least in the modern era. But he did something bigger. He created a center, which was a base of diplomacy and political influence. And that, combined with several books, made him a very active, a proactive figure on the public stage, from everything from elections to offering ideas about the Middle East.
Well, I was just going to say that's been controversial. He's very critical of the U.S. and Israel when it comes to Palestinians.
Hugely controversial. Carter, one thing we know about him is once he was freed from the presidency, he was willing to say what was on his mind. And there are many people who feel that in some issues, he comes down on one side of the debate rather than in a diplomatic role of trying to mediate things. And so in the Middle East, this has been his biggest area of controversy, with many supporters of Israel feeling he's not, you know, working on a peace in the area so much as taking the side of the Palestinian point of view. So that's been a source of controversy.
Yeah, and just to remind us how he exited office and how he maybe entered it, elected in 1976 after Watergate, a humiliating time for many Republicans. But put that in context. I mean, what was his term like?
Well, he entered with great hope. I mean, he runs in 1976 as the guy you can trust again. And Americans are disillusioned with government. They don't believe anything after Richard Nixon. And he offered them for a while hope that politics could be different. 4 years later, it was a disaster. Foreign policy turned against him. The economy seemed to be it was struggling. And he was an incredibly unpopular president. And many Democrats were as happy as Republicans when he left office. So a few imagined that in the next few decades, he would remain so active and become such a force on the political scene. But it was a difficult presidency.
Well, let's listen to, though, the hope at the beginning. This is part of his acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention in New York.
It's time for us to take a new look at our own government, to strip away the secrecy, to expose the unwarranted pressure of lobbyists, to eliminate waste, and always to remember that in any town or city, the mayor, the governor, and the president represent exactly the same constituents.
So there is that at the beginning of the presidency, and we remember after he was sworn in, he and his wife Rosalynn stopped their limousine, got out, walked during the parade down Pennsylvania Avenue. This is a symbol of his desire to be, you know, of the people. But, well, what is, have historians yet, historians like you, yet decided what was the biggest problem with his presidency? Because he does have supporters who say the hostage situation in Iran would have robbed any president of popularity.
Well, there's something to that. Obviously, that was a terrible crisis for international relations and just for the morale of the U.S. But I think there's other problems. You know, one that historians like to talk about is that he never got along with congressional Democrats very well from the start. And you could hear it in the speech you just played. Not only was he promising to restore faith in government, he was as willing to go after his own party and the interests that supported his party as he was the Republicans. So many congressional Democrats like Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House, really didn't like him. And they felt that he was not a Democratic president. And I think that many historians would say ultimately undermined what he was or was not able to do. He also chose issues that didn't have a lot of political payoff. So he did deal with energy and the environment, but those were not issues in the middle of a horrible economic situation that many Americans wanted to focus on.
Well, he famously wore sweaters and turned down the heat in the White House. And Americans were saying, wait a second, and this is when they were queuing up to long lines to get gas at gas stations. Again, the Middle East was in turmoil, and I think this is when the hostage situation was going on, or no?
Yeah, the second oil shock is in 1979. His first speech is actually in 77 on energy, but it never really plays very well, any of this. But his final speech, which is called the Malaise Speech on this issue, really falls flat after a few days. Americans are frustrated that he's not leading. He's preaching to them, and they want someone to lead them out of the mess.
They don't want somebody sort of lecturing them on their morality when it came to energy and, telling them to turn down their heat. They wanted somebody to reassure them that they would have heat.
Right. And there were also many politicians who weren't open to some of the policies he did propose. Many people didn't want to push for conservation. They didn't think American constituents wanted that. In the Northeast, many Democrats didn't want to take on the measures that he wanted because it would mean higher fuel prices for them. So it was a really complex policy, but equally important. He wasn't someone who could put it together in a politically appealing package. So he faced a difficult situation, and he didn't do a lot with it.
But was he right? We're now looking at all these questions about energy, and everybody's recycling and everybody's trying to cut back on use. We have drought in California where people are using less water. I mean, people have a sense now that they have to be more conservationist when it comes to their energy.
There were a lot of issues he was on top of early on. I mean, energy and energy conservation was one of them. He was one of the first presidents to really talk about human rights and the need to make human rights part of foreign policy, not just war. And he also was one of the strongest proponents of diplomacy as opposed to war. And over the long run, I think there's many Americans who agree that he was on to something important, even if he wasn't the person to implement it.
Well, and here we have him in his post-presidency, as you say, one that sort of rewrote the books on what it should be. Compare what he's doing to, let's say, the Clinton Foundation.
Well, certainly the controversial parts for some people will sour Carter to everyone. So if you don't like what he's doing on the Middle East, regardless of all his other work, you'll say, well, he's not doing so much. But in general, I think you have to at least admit that he has been committed to the role of trying to be an international world diplomat, whereas Clinton has been much more focused on fundraising, speeches, and politics, still a partisan politician. I don't think Carter really likes that, and I don't think he's been interested in that. He's really driven by his commitment to policy. And I think it's a big difference in how they've spent their years thus far.
And Julian, just a quick thought. Presidents are younger. Look at Barack Obama. And people are, in general, living longer. Do you see a possibility that a president might leave office and not do anything? I guess part of that question, are you and others waiting to see what George W. Bush does?
My suspicion is he might become more involved over time. I think when you have younger presidents, you're just going to see, especially in the post-Carter world, that at some moment, if not throughout their post-presidency, they're going to remain engaged and active political players. But that can mean different things. So you might have a Carter model, you might have a quieter model like George W. Bush, or you might have a more political model like Bill Clinton.
That's Julian Zelitzer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School. We've been taking a look at Jimmy Carter, who just made headlines recently for not feeling well. And our reaction was, well, but still, he's traveling around the world at 90, more than most. By the way, Julian's latest book is The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress and the Battle for the Great Society. Julian, thanks as always.
Thank you.